What's up, everybody? Shout out, that was DeBron Thomas, Lexington's own. Big ups to DeBron. Big ups to the Take Back Cheapside movement. You are tuned in to Bluegrass Bios here on Lexington Community Radio, WLXU LPFM, Lexington. I'm Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And we will be with you for the next hour, interviewing some cool folks, some very interesting people doing interesting stuff here around Kentucky.
I would think Lexington. So. It's a busy weekend. We got a lot of stuff happening this weekend.
It is. This is.
We'll have to tell it. We'll tell you all about it later.
It's jam packed. There's a lot of things that happened this week too.
What happened this week, Chuck?
Well, a number of things happened. Mostly, the Cubs winning the World Series is the big news.
Is that really news?
I mean, that's for me.
Yeah, it
I
was mean, great. It was really sweet.
I mean, that's.
I shed more than one tear.
Did you? Are you a big Cubs fan, Ben?
Getting there, you know. We mentioned the first hour. My family's from Illinois. I don't know if you remember the days when WGN was one of all of 30 cable channels you got, and they aired every Cubs game. And so when you've got the summer off, and they were always on during the day because no lights yet. I remember, games having to be called because it was like 7 o'clock.
Yeah, you know, the first night game was actually in Cincinnati. Crosley Field.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
It's true. And speaking of Cincinnati, that's where I grew up, in Covington. But
I was a Reds fan first.
See, so that's why, you know, the Cubs have a special spot in my heart, only because in the NL Central they were always at the bottom of the stack. So props, so happy for the Cubs to break the curse. Absolutely. So happy Harry Carey's smiling down.
Yeah, yeah, and the curse is now passed on to Cleveland until they get rid of their logo.
Yeah, that's
Braves,
true.
Braves got rid of their logo, won the World Series. Mm-hmm. Who did they beat?
Yeah.
Cleveland.
Yeah.
Maybe Cleveland.
Yeah. Albert Bell.
But that was an amazing game. It was a little bit more amazing than it needed to be.
Yeah, well, I love this Game 7 because there was a late game home run, but also because there was a rain delay in extra innings at Game 7 of the World Series, which also extra
may
innings
have been
in
the difference in the game, really.
Yeah, maybe.
Allowed everybody to regroup.
But I also love that Bill Murray made such an omnipresent cameo at the game, and I love that he also, I guess, had a few seats and had just given them to strangers and let them come in and sit next to him at the game.
That's amazing.
Bill Murray. And, you know, Bill Murray owns a minor league baseball team up in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Oh, cool.
He's there all the time, so he's a big baseball guy.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you what made the game for me in that similar kind of vein was watching Anthony Rizzo in the dugout. They did a very good job just like putting the camera on him because he was just, what did he say? I'm an emotional wreck right now. And you'd see him just involuntarily grabbing whoever was next to him just by the shoulders and gripping them.
Yeah.
And then you saw him on third base in the 10th inning just clutching his head. And just amplified kind of everything.
Yeah.
When I say the game was more amazing than it needed to be, I've never seen a coach make so many wrong moves. Madden for Chicago, everything he did was completely wrong. Wrong hitter, wrong subs, wrong time.
But he must have done so much right.
I guess leading up
to that point, you know.
And both bullpens were wasted, so that kind of cancels each other out.
That's true. Well,
and how many infield hits was Cleveland going to get? It seemed like every other at bat there was a slow roller that died in the grass in between the pitcher and third.
That's true.
But it was a great game, and I think it ranks up there. It was I remember Game 7 between the Braves and the Twins. That was amazing.
Yeah.
And then you have the Reds and the Red Sox in the 70s.
Carlton Fisk.
Yeah. Well, that was Game 6. And then Game 7, I thought, well, the Reds won Game 7. So, in my opinion, that was better. And, Pittsburgh, New York Yankees back in the 50s. You've got St. Louis and Minnesota. Mm-hmm. They had a great Game 7. There's so many.
Yeah, and the earthquake in Oakland, if you recall that. That was quite a fiasco as well.
Oh, yeah. That was
Yeah, I think it's interesting to see baseball, and even if people aren't fans of sports and see it as a distraction,
that's fun. We're not talking to you.
Yeah, well
you're missing. It's your loss.
I'm talking to them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go that far.
Okay, now we're talking.
Because they're right. But it's interesting to see that even though people don't care about sports, that people can still celebrate with the people of Chicago and recognize that literally the last time they won a series, women didn't have the right to vote.
Right.
And
no electricity in most homes.
Yeah, and they really didn't for years after that. So it's been a while. As somebody told me, Babe Ruth was 13 the last time the Cubs won the World Series.
Oh, speaking of voting, Chuck.
Exactly. Speaking of
voting.
That
was a nice unintentional segue.
Hey,
it must have been
I just laid the
subconscious thing I planted in your head earlier.
I just laid the bunt down.
Thank you.
You know.
And it didn't, roll fell. God, that's another horrible decision.
So this week,
is
Tuesday.
It's coming up on Tuesday, and I have a spiel.
Sure,
I've been giving it for roughly 20 years.
Let's hear it, Ben.
It's reinforced every time I say it. If you listen to every episode of our show, you've heard me say pieces of it here and there, because I know a lot of people do not like their choices for president. Here's the thing. There are other elections other than president in which you can vote, and good men and women for whom you may vote. There's really no excuse. If you look at any ballot in the country, I can find you two people worth showing up to vote for. And if there's a ballot initiative, well, that's direct democracy. You can't miss that. So that's number one. Number two is voting has become kind of a secondary census in the United States. It's a way to stand up and be counted because it's a secret ballot. They can't look at the person for whom you're voting, but they're looking at your ethnicity, your gender, and your age, and what issues are important to you. And this is why young people never seem to get what they want, and old people always do, because old people vote at an 80% clip. And not only can you not win an election without old people, you can't have an election without old people because they're the only ones down there manning the polls. Personally, I'd like to see the voting age lowered. I'd like to see it go down to 16 just to start getting people involved at an earlier age and maybe running the polls. And I think it's fun for me.
Yeah,
and there are very few excuses now. We have early voting. We have it's not unbelievably difficult to get an absentee ballot if you're a wage earner and you have to work. I think that qualifies you.
Yeah.
Stand up and be counted, and you don't have to vote for president if you don't want. You don't have to vote for governor. You don't have to vote for mayor. Cast an empty ballot, for all I care. If you're really that disgusted with everybody and everything, show me. Show me your disgust. Yeah. Show me some civil disobedience. Wouldn't it be neat if none of the above was an option? And, do a write-in. Do a write-in for none of the above and see what happens. And I think there are even a couple of countries where they have none of the above, and if none of the above wins, they have to do a runoff election. Maybe we should think about doing something like that.
Yeah, and I think it's important. In a democracy, you have to have your say. And I understand that a lot of people feel jaded, and people feel like, particularly in a state like Kentucky, that their vote doesn't really count, and there's no representatives that recognized what they believe in and what they want to do in the future that they see in America. But you're right. And it's not just about the presidential election. In fact, the people that govern your life more closely are folks who here in Lexington and here
Absolutely.
In the state, your House representatives, your senators,
city council
members.
Oh, sheriffs and judges.
And Board of Education.
Board of Education.
So I want to encourage everyone to do two things. One, if you didn't register to vote in time, to vote this time, that's okay. You probably should have taken care of that, but if you didn't, you can be ready for the next time. You can go to govoteky.org.
Govoteky.org.
And that is a website where this past year Kentucky has passed legislation so that you can register to vote online. So you don't have to go to your county clerk's office. You don't have to send in cards.
Great.
You can do it in your pajamas, eating chili cheese Fritos. And you can participate in your democracy.
Well, this is coming. This is what we're headed towards, I think, in the future. Is we've got to have some kind of online. Personally, I would show up.
Yeah,
I'd get up early and go in just because I'm too familiar with hackers and how they work.
Yeah,
so
well, that's okay. I'm not in favor of...
But it would be nice if it was there for people who can't make it in.
Yeah, and I'm not in favor of voting online, per se. I mean, even though there are absentee ballots, I think this is just to register.
That's
but
fine.
The other website I want to tell you about is KentuckyElection.org. That's spelled out K-E-N-T-U-C-K-Y, election.org. And what that is a voter guide that's put together by Kentuckians for the Commonwealth, where they've sent off a series of questions clearly defining where the candidates stand on progressive issues, you know, everything from the future of Appalachia to local sustainability to global warming, a variety of different things. So you can check it out and see how the voters responded, or how the candidates responded.
Do they have that thing where you can compare your answers to theirs, or do you have to kind of do that manually?
They're just right next to each other.
Okay, great.
So it's a very great site, KentuckyElection.org. You can go there and see where the candidates stand, get to know the candidates better before you cast your ballot, so you don't just cast it for a total stranger. But anyways, right. You know, whatever you got to do, next Tuesday, get out to vote.
The next person who says, and you know, some of you know what I look like. The next person who says to me, "Voting sucks and it doesn't matter," you're gonna get a pinch.
Yeah,
nothing violent.
I understand.
Just pinch.
Yeah,
and just okay, maybe a little slap, but it won't be harsh.
Well,
it won't be assault.
All subtle, you know, physical threats aside, I want to talk about some other things that are going on this weekend here in Lexington.
Sure, sure.
First of all, our guest today, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios, by the way, with Chuck and Ben. We're going to be discussing some cool things going on around town with Stephanie Harris, who's the executive director of the Lexington Art League. And then a little bit later on, we're going to be joined by Chris Bryant, who's the CEO of Partnering for Hope Kentucky.
Fresh off his World Series win.
So we're going to be talking with them a little bit later on, but I want to talk about a few things going on here around town. Tonight at the Lyric Theater, from 5 to 7 p.m., Bluegrass Community Technical College is going to be having a student, faculty, and staff art show. So that's happening at the Lyric over on 3rd Street. Also, this Saturday at the Carnegie Center, the Carnegie Classics, 1984 is happening, which is celebrating George Orwell's ominous dystopian novel, 1984.
Let that discourage you from voting.
Yeah. Oh, if anything, it should scare the hell out of you to go vote.
Maybe some similarities between that book and what's happening now in our current present.
Absolutely. And that's why this event is perfect timing. Mm-hmm. So that's this Saturday at 7 p.m. at the Carnegie Center. There will be art. There will be a performance from Everyone Lives. Everyone Wins. So that's happening. The night market is happening tonight here on the north side of Lexington. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. Well, I wanted to, because it covered the entire front page of the Weekender, and the front, what may have gotten a little buried in there is the Kentucky Book Fair is tomorrow from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Frankfort Convention Center in Frankfort. And that actually looks like kind of like fun.
Cool.
Kind of like, who did we
all have?
Oh, Frank X. Walker's going to be there. Wendell Berry's going to be there.
Shout out.
Yeah, those are really good. impressive, intimidating guys there.
Commonwealth literati.
Yeah.
Representing.
Yeah.
So there's a few things. This Sunday, there's going to be a fall car show, the North Lyme car show, behind Minton 760 from noon to 3 on Sunday. So that's going on. And
cool.
Other than that, that's it. Night market's tonight at 700 block of Bryan Avenue. If you don't know about it, it's like a pop-up open-air market. A lot of local food, local vendors, and live entertainment. So that's happening from, I believe, from 6 o'clock tonight over at 700 block of Bryan Avenue. So if you just drive up North Limestone, you're going to see it.
Yeah, you'll see it. And there's plenty of places to park just along, just in the neighborhood and stuff like that.
So
don't worry about that. So, all right.
That's some cool stuff going on, but nonetheless, shall we take a break?
Yeah, let's cut to a little music and we'll be back.
Stephanie Harris from the Lexington Art League. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios.
Peace.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM, Lexington, Kentucky, here in the beautiful Bluegrass region. My name is Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And we'll be with you until 2 o'clock. Today, we will be discussing the Lexington Art League, and more specifically, the Lexington Art League Black Friday Art Sale, which is happening. I know most people are surprised it's already November and cannot believe it.
I think the weather may have something to do with it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's finally October weather.
Yeah. Well, yesterday was the hottest day ever on that date.
Oh, well, I think the first one, the November 1st.
That was when it was really hard.
Yeah. That's already the 4th.
Yeah.
This is how fast time is going.
Doesn't feel like Christmas, but
yeah,
Christmas
it was to 85 on, no, but nothing to see here.
Yeah.
Nothing happening. Well, 2 years ago, it was 15 degrees on November 1st.
It's crazy. So basically, Christmas is around the corner, and so the Lexington Art League is hosting a Black Friday art sale on December 2nd. From 7 to 10 p.m., they do this every year, where all the art for sale is $50 or less. So it's affordable. It's very egalitarian. Everybody can come.
And these are originals.
Yeah, they're all local artists. And joining us here in the studio is one of those local artists, Colleen Newcomb.
Hello.
Hi, Colleen. How's it going?
Good.
Sweet. Well, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me here.
So, Colleen, you specify in stained glass,
yes.
Right? Can you tell us a little bit about your work with Letterland is the name? Letterland Glass?
Letterland Glass is my Instagram.
Great.
So I've been making stained glass. I do a lot of sun catchers, wall hangings. Some of them could even be ornaments. And a lot of my pieces are inspired by nature. I also have a lot of music-inspired pieces. So some of my pieces for the Black Friday sale, I'll have like feathers with agates. I do like moons and banjos, just kind of like small pieces like that for the sale.
Very cool. Yeah, so stained glass is a pretty interesting medium because there are so many variations that you can add to it. When you're making a stained glass piece, kind of what is your process?
It's a pretty long process. You start with your design, and some people buy patterns, but I draw all of mine by hand. So you get your design, and then you have to cut apart the glass. So you have to actually break it and snap it apart. And then usually you grind the pieces. It's like a wet grinder, so it turns, you know, the glass powder isn't flying at your face. So you do that. And then I use the Tiffany foil method. So then I have to foil the pieces and then solder them. And sometimes I apply a patina to the solder. So there's several steps involved for each piece. No matter what size, you know, it always has the long steps. So
that's great. And so how did you get interested? Where did you find that was the medium you wanted to pursue?
It's a newer medium for me. Actually, I've only been making stained glass for about a year. I've done other mediums before, but I just felt like I wasn't really pushing myself in the way I wanted to. I really wanted something that had a little more depth that I could really get into. So I started doing the stained glass, and it's just been on a roll ever since. So
that's great. So with stained glass, as far as getting the stain on the glass to get a specific color, I know you have to mix certain elements together to kind of get it that way. How do you go about kind of that process?
I actually buy all my glass in sheets. You can make your own glass, but that requires a whole different studio and set of tools.
Absolutely.
But I actually buy my glass from Halleck Glass, which is in town here on Burt Road. But it comes in sheets, and you can get, you know, you can have the sheets cut down. So I usually go in there and try to select based on the projects I'm currently working on, but sometimes it's like being in a candy store and you want to get all the colors.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. So are there any, I guess, what is the community of stained glass artists like here in Lexington, like beyond the Lexington Art League? Is there an association or a...
I know that there are a lot of people that make stained glass in Lexington. I only know a few. I don't know that it's like an interwoven community per se, but I think there are a lot of people here doing the craft.
There's Stephanie.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, that's great to hear. And do you feel like you've been supported by the Lexington Art League and having a venue to showcase your art?
Yeah, I'm just kind of getting in touch with the Lexington Art League. I was in the Prohibition show recently there, and now I'm doing the Black Friday market, so it's a new relationship for me.
Great. Well, that's awesome. And so joining us here in the studio is Stephanie Harris, the Executive Director of the Lexington Art League. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Hey, thanks for coming in. So we've just been talking a little bit about the Black Friday art sale and kind of how it's a venue for a local artist to get their work out.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about kind of how the event came about?
You bet. So this is one of those wonderful opportunities. We were working with an artist named Derek Riley, who has a company called D-Rock Press. And for many years, he had wanted to start a holiday art sale that was similar to other sales that he had gone to in other communities. So he brought this idea to us as in a partnership. And he said, you know, I know a lot of printmakers who, you know, I know a lot of artists who are creating work, you know, small-scale prints, things like that. They don't really have a venue to show their work. You know, they're not getting shown in fine art galleries, but there's a big movement. Artists are making a lot of work like this, and they're going around to these shows. It's not like your traditional, you know, fine art and craft fair. These are really, you know, more emerging artists working with a variety of different mediums that we don't always see in a gallery. And he said, you know, this would be a really great way to get some new artists through the Art League. And we agreed. I mean, part of what we focus on at the Lexington Art League is really providing opportunities for artists at every stage of their career. And emerging artists has always been one of our primary areas of focus. So when you have a partner like that who brings you an idea in kind of a very authentic way, like let's work together to help more people, you have this really beautiful thing that happens. So now this year, this is the sixth year of the Black Friday art sale. And we advertise it as, you know, an alternative gift buying holiday market. So people, you know, may not go to the malls and the stores to buy things. They might actually buy original works of art from artists. And the thing that's great also about the sale is, like, you know, we have administrative costs. We pay for the marketing. We obviously organize this massive sale, but we have a very modest commission of 10%. So the majority of the money that people spend at that market is going directly back in the pockets of 27 local artists this year.
It's awesome. Right. Celebrating, supporting your local artists.
Yes.
That's amazing. And also it kind of ties into the Lexington Art League's message, the overall motto is art for everyone.
It is art for everyone. You know, we started talking about that and really sharing that message with people probably over 5 years ago now. I think at first people are like, well, you know, what does that mean? Everybody doesn't want to consume art. And, you know, it became this like, you can't just say that. Everybody doesn't want art. And I think the larger point and the thing that we're trying to really focus on is the fact that, you know, everybody can find a space for art in their life, especially working with contemporary art. I mean, we're all reflected in it. It means something to all of us. It's part of our society. So, you know, how do you get to as many people as you can to help them find their entry point into art?
Yeah.
And that's, you know, for us, we look at visual art. So it's, you know, kind of sometimes an immediate response because you're seeing work that you relate to. Sometimes it's not so immediate, but I think what we're doing at the Art League is that we're not passive in our engagement. I mean, we really take on the responsibility to make sure, you know, our daily guests in the gallery, you know, they can have a conversation with whomever's at the front desk about the work. They can ask questions. We actually welcome that. We want people to be spending time with work in a very thoughtful way. Because we're all learning, you know, and this assumption that art spaces are only for people that have the highest level of knowledge, I think that that's really, to some degree, put a little bit of a damper on the field at times.
Yeah.
Certainly, I feel like academic conversations about visual art are very important, but I think they're important in a specific setting, and I think when you're dealing with community, you want everybody to feel like they've got a place, and I think that's really what we're striving for.
And not convolute it with, you know, pretentiousness or, you know, financial inaccessibility, you know. I think there is a concept that art is too expensive, or there's a certain level of intelligence you need to have to be able to enjoy it and understand it. And I love that the Lexington Art League is kind of starting to undo that.
Yeah, we love it too. I mean, you know, we'll be, our organization's going to celebrate its 60th birthday next year.
So can you give us a little bit about the history of the Art League, kind of how the Lexington Art League came about?
Yeah, so it's this really wonderful story that, you know, 60 years ago, there were these artists in the community who wanted to provide a space to build a community. And to create a space to show their work. And so a group of volunteer artists started what is, you know, today the Lexington Art League that exists in the Loudoun House. at that time, and it's lived in many different spaces throughout that time. We've been at the Loudoun House for 35 years now. Wow. We're very fortunate to have a great partnership with Parks and Recreation, so they make that space available to us through a rental program. But you know what I love about it is that idea kind of is still wound very like at the heart of our DNA, in that we want to provide space for people to grow.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, whether that's artists or whether that's our community or children that live around the Loudoun House, you know, we do free programming all year long for students that live right there in Castlewood Park. And those are the things that, you know, Woodland gets a ton of attention and things like that. People see those things. But the day-to-day function of the organization is extremely interwoven in the community. And that's really how it started.
Yeah, and I think using art to really change the city, you know, that's the grind that needs to happen.
Agreed.
To make us better thinkers, you know, more expressive people, and to ask those questions.
Definitely.
So that's awesome. I guess my next question for you is kind of also in the vein of art for everyone. I know your partnership with John Winters and Jessica Winters at Prohibition this year, and murals going up all over town. Whether people don't... Actually, I guess first, can we explain Prohibition a little bit, just in case people are like, what are these drawings all over these buildings I'm seeing popping up all over?
Yeah, sure. For years, I mean, I've known Jessica for a very long time, and I know John. He's a really nice guy too. But you know, Prohibition's one of those things that, you know, from an organization perspective, we've been sitting back watching this evolve, and I've always been extremely impressed with the level of work and the quality of work that they were doing. You know, just as two passionate community members who believed in providing a space for street artists to have a visible presence in a city like Lexington. Mm-hmm. You know, again, when we can identify different aspects of the art field that aren't being supported, and as organizations and as patrons and certainly people that help donate to the arts, we're really doing our job when we're elevating and bringing the work of artists who are typically not seen to the forefront of the community. It just so happens that this year John and Jessica were interested in having a visual arts partner for Prohibition, and it was something that I had kind of been, you know, talking to her about from time to time, like, this would be really great. You know, we have a residency program. We could bring the artists through our program, and then we could help with the administrative side because, you know, I mean, that's what we do. That's the function that we play.
Why did you decide to call it Prohibition, if I may ask?
I think that was their, I mean, that was their titling from the beginning.
Okay.
And I think that there's a whole kind of culture that's suggested in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they tied it back to Prohibition, which isn't necessarily related to visual art.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it, just from knowing John, dealt with kind of graffiti as, you know, weird dual-edged sword of like, is it legal? Should this be okay? Is it really graffiti if it's approved by the city and the person that owns the building? Or like, where does art and where does just tagging something without permission?
And should I care?
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, then that's just kind of indicative of that specific field of art, and that, you know, what is now called street art started with graffiti artists.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, first it was people, you know, empowering themselves with materials and, you know, approaching buildings that they may or may not have permission to work on.
Yeah.
And then what evolved from that is that there is now this whole entire world of art that focuses on street art, street culture. You know, these artists are working in very different conditions than what, you know, artists in a studio are working in.
Mm-hmm.
The artist that painted the mural at the Art League this year, which again, we are so delighted because now every year during Prohibition, we get a brand new mural. The wall will be painted over every year because again, you know, murals are not intended to have a huge lifespan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and actually talking to the artists, they were like, well, if this isn't tagged in a week, we'll be surprised. Because I think that the media and the kind of discipline of street art, it calls for that. Those artists, when they're working on the walls, they're making statements.
Mm-hmm.
They're communicating to each other and to an audience.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, those artists were out there all hours of the night. They're up on lifts. They're, you know, dealing with these fumes all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So to really watch that that practice and their process, it was really enlightening for me. I've not had that experience before to watch that, you know, one-on-one.
It is, and it's incredible, you know, that it has gained that legitimacy, and, you know, it's certainly making our public spaces way more interesting to be in. So, Stephanie, the last question I want to ask you is kind of, as being the executive director of the Lexington Art League, what do you see in Lexington, and particularly in Lexington's art scene, that's different kind of than other cities? Like, where do we sit that's unique to other places?
You know, I think it's really interesting because, I mean, I've lived in Lexington for just about 10 years now, and I think it's an extraordinary place.
Where are you from?
I'm from Northeast Ohio originally. And arts in Ohio, I mean, are very, very well supported, very vibrant, you know, arts culture there too. But there's something that's very interesting about just, you know, Kentucky and specifically Lexington and our surrounding counties. You know, it's the amount of artists, quality artists in every field living in this area. I mean, we are beyond blessed when you think about how many artists and how many different disciplines call Lexington or Kentucky home. The other thing that I think is really unique to our community is that we have this great thing, this bubbling up that happens. You know, we have things like Prohibition that get started by two community members who care enough about their community to make it a better place. Yeah. You know, you have professors like Curtin Kerman at Transy bringing the community together through art activities where students are learning about, you know, how do you make art a authentic part of a community? Mm. You know, I just think the variety of offerings that we have and the willingness for people even outside of arts organizations to take on the ownership of programs and projects because they believe in their ability to improve our community. That kind of grassroots, passionate approach to the arts, I think, is what makes Lexington unique and just really amazing.
That's great. Well, that's a great answer as well. And, you know, I couldn't agree more. You know, I think the size of our city is, you know, potentially the biggest small town in America.
Exactly. I think it should stay just like that.
Yeah, it's perfect. I like to describe Lexington as the porridge that's just right.
Yes, exactly.
So, I think there is some tangibility, but it's big enough that you can find other people who identify with your mission and can help you get there and help you grow and grow. And it seems like not only Prohibition, but also the Lexington Art League in general over the last 60 years has certainly done that.
Oh, my.
So I guess before we wrap up, can you let us know if there are any artists listening or any people who are interested in art, where can they go to find more information? And are there any calls to artists open right now?
There are. Oh, my gosh. There's so much I could share right now, but I'll try to hurry.
Okay.
Yeah. If folks go to our website, all of our information is on there. There's an artist tab. So if you click on the artist tab, it'll list all of the opportunities. Real quickly, we have an artist archive project that we will come to your studio, do a studio visit, and get you listed on this online database. We've got over 250 profiles now. That's growing and really doing a lot for the artists that are in it. Programs like Community Supported Art, where we sell shares of handmade art. We do that every year. Mm-hmm. So the best thing for artists to do if they're not involved with the Art League is just send us an email.
Yeah.
And we will respond to you, and we will help you find a way to get connected to the organization.
Much like Colleen. That's how you got involved,
that's
right?
That's right.
Yeah, so that's awesome. So lastly, we're here with Stephanie Harris, Executive Director of the Lexington Art League, and our local artist, Colleen Newcomb. And so we're talking about the Black Friday art sale.
Black Friday art sale. When and where, and where do you park? And will there be food?
So first of all, it is called the Black Friday art sale. It is not Black Friday.
Oh, good.
So many people are really uncomfortable with that, but it's like, it's a thing. Like, Derek thought it'd be funny, so it's been 6 years, so this is what it is. It's the Black Friday art sale, but it's on December 2nd and 3rd. And again, the hours on Friday are 7 to 10 p.m. And 2 to 7 on Saturday. The thing that's great about the sale is that we have 27 artists throughout the house. We're even incorporating the back courtyard. That area will be heated this year. So basically what you do is you go around and you shop from all the artists. We have one point of sale, so we make that really easy for everybody. We do accept all credit cards. We will have cash box, everything, so you can purchase the work however you want. We will have a variety of food trucks there. We will also have our friends at West 6, and all of our favorite vendors will be there. We're also doing some special things this year with demos. So artists will be doing pottery demos. We'll have people doing printmaking demos. Because again, for us, anytime we can contextualize the work that people are seeing, the better. We want people to see artists at work, and so they can better understand, you know, this is something really unique that I'm buying to take home for my loved one. This was made by this person, and now I've actually seen them do that.
Yeah.
We're also linking in with a partner from your child, I think it's your child's preschool, Playhouse Preschool, and they're going to be there doing childcare for us as our partner. So if you don't want to drag your kids all the way through the house, we'll have an interactive art space where you can, you know, sign your kids in. It'll be safe, and they can play while you shop.
Some of the artists who make the art that you're potentially buying will be at the sale?
They'll all be there.
Fantastic.
So you can talk to them about their work and visit with them, and you know, it's really a great thing. And the sixth year, we anticipate it's going to be even better attended than years before. So we feel very fortunate to have the opportunity.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming in, Colleen and Stephanie. And
thank you.
Black Friday art sale December 2nd at the Loudon House, the Lexington Art League. Be sure to not trample each other when the doors open in the morning. But there will be art for everyone. So nonetheless, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here with Ben and Chuck, and we will be back here soon with Chris Bryant, CEO of Partnering for Hope Kentucky. Till then, we'll see you soon.
Maybe next time around, things don't have to feel so
everybody, and we're back. You're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on Lexington Community Radio.
Is that your NPR voice,
Chuck? It is, yeah. Hey, everybody.
This is mine.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us.
Anyways, so I'm Chuck, and this is Ben.
Hey, Chuck.
Hey, Ben. And we're here with Chris and Eric from Partnering for Hope Kentucky. Hi, guys.
Hi.
How's it going?
Well, it was okay until it was Partnering for You.
I know. I'm so sorry. Sorry, I got a little, I looked at the word
youth. That's a free slogan for you.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. We'll have to coin that one.
Yeah, but Partnering for Hope Kentucky. So can you all tell us a little bit about Partnering for Hope Kentucky and what you all do, all the good work that you all do?
Sure. You know, our main mission is to help underprivileged kids in the community, you know, and we do various things throughout the years, like collecting teddy bears or books or clothes or food, just about anything you can name for a child in need.
Great. And you all are, you know, a nonprofit organization here, you know, promoting literacy and giving hope to kids of all ages by building long-term relationships and, you know, teaching kids never to give up on their dreams. So what an awesome and admirable goal to have. Can you tell us a little bit kind of the history about Partnering for Hope Kentucky and kind of how things got started and why it got started?
Sure. Well, I can tell you the literary aspect started with me because before we started the nonprofit, I'm an author.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have my first book published. I'm working on getting the second one out now. And I wanted to give people the opportunity to, you know, share in that, because that's my dream. Yeah. You know, I always wanted to be an author and share my stories with anybody who would take the time to read them. And so that's where the whole literary focus came from.
Cool.
And I had another buddy, his name was Ryan. He was the co-founder with me at the time, and he had family who'd been through the children's hospitals at some point. And because of that, he wanted to do something to give back, so we decided to start a nonprofit to help.
Cool. That's awesome. And if people want to check out your books, is there anywhere that they can go to?
They're on Amazon right now. It's called The Sword of Hope, Destiny Awaits.
Cool.
It's the first in the series.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you all work with children. You said children's hospital, hospitals in particular. Kind of, who are some other organizations that you all work with and partner up with?
Aside from UK Children's Hospital, we've also worked with Sunrise Children's Services, Shriners, the Chrysalis House. Mm. We've donated to St. Joe Women's Center, the Woodford County Detention Centers, the Fraternal Order of Firefighters here, and trying to think of what else. Mm-hmm. I think that's all we've
quite
donated
a list.
To.
Yeah,
no, it's quite a bit.
It's quite. Well,
you know, that's just who we've donated to.
That's
you know,
only
that's
really
not even including.
Impressive. Don't rub it in.
Sorry.
Now, well, if people need more assistance, where can they find you, physically or virtually?
Virtually, Facebook, or we have our own page, partneringforhopeky.com. I know it's like 8 miles long. Physically, you know, we have a phone number and everything. Anytime anybody calls us, we can meet them wherever. Because right now, our
office is...
What is
that number for?
It's 859-287-2995. Because right now, our office is my dining room.
Nice. Well, it sounds like a true nonprofit.
Yeah. Oh, it's great, yeah. Though. I mean, like with our first teddy bear drive, as an example, I have a picture of it at home where my entire dining room table is completely covered in teddy bears.
Wow. Can you talk a little bit about that and kind of how that came about and how people can help you, help with that campaign?
Sure. Well, this is actually, we just started another one. This is our third annual. We do it every November for the entire month, and we set up different donation bins in different locations, like collectibles, etc., on Richmond Road, as an example. And we've branched out through Lexington, Nicholasville, Versailles, and Louisville now. Oh. And, you know, every year we partner with someone. Like last year, we partnered with Noodles and Company, and they did a promotion throughout the second half of the month to where if anybody brought in a teddy bear, which they had to be new since they were going to places like the Children's Hospital,
yeah.
But they would get a free bowl of noodles. And they're actually considering doing that again this year.
Wow.
But every year it's gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, we started out just three of us the first year, and we still ended up raising like 157 bears.
Wow. And so who, I guess, when do you all make that drop? Because I love the idea that it's you guys riding around in your car with 157 teddy bears in the back.
Oh, so, it was even more last year. You should have seen it. We had 680 last year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, in my truck, it's insane.
That's awesome. So where do you all deliver? Well, I guess my first question is, where do you all deliver them to, and how do you learn about people who want them? How do you learn about the kids?
Yeah, how can people apply for a teddy bear?
Okay. Well, you know, you can go on our website. That's sure. For one. Anybody can sign up through there. Cool. And, you know, that's for donations, for volunteering, for everything, you know, related right. to us, as well as the Facebook page, and we're calling. How we chose originally, well, you know, UK Children's Hospital has been near and dear to my heart since the start, because...
Great work.
That and the first time that we donated to them, I mean, just seeing the look on these kids' faces after getting, you know, a teddy bear that they may not have otherwise been able to have, you know, it just grabs your heart and doesn't let go.
It's awesome. It's great motivation to keep working even harder.
Yeah.
So I guess my next question is kind of about the kids. You know, what can you give us some fun stories about some children that you all, your organization that Partnering for Hope Kentucky has touched? And
sure. I've got one, and then Eric, if you want to throw one in there.
Sure.
You're awfully quiet over there in the corner.
We'll move that.
Oh, okay. So, one, this was our second year when we donated to UK Children's Hospital. Someone at one of our locations had donated a giant teddy bear. I mean, it was almost as big as me, and I'm not a little guy. And we decided to save that one for last. We put a Partner for Hope t-shirt on it, and all of us signed it, and the nurses decided that they were going to do a raffle after we donated to all the other kids to just give it away to some, you know, some random room or some random kid.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that when we were making the rounds earlier on, this particular kid who won didn't want anything to do with the teddy bears at all. He said he was too cool for it.
Oh, my.
It was hilarious. So then we picked the number, and it ended up being the same kid. And the nurses made, like, a little wrap and everything. They went in there, and they're like, here's the teddy bears for you. And he ended up loving it, but it was funny.
It was an acquired taste.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really funny. Are there ever any kids that are just blown away? Their reaction was just... unbelievable.
There's been a few. One that kind of hit us pretty close was the other day.
Yeah, we were making drops in Versailles, and one of the ladies that was in the restaurant came up to me and says, you know, hey, my nephew was in UK Chandler for about the first 6 months of his life, and he actually got one of the teddy bears during the first year that you all did the drive, and he still has it to this day, and he, you know, won't let it go.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, yeah, it sounds like you all are definitely truly touching lives and helping kids feel a little better, giving them some hope and you know, tough times. So is Partnering for Hope Kentucky predominantly volunteer run, or are there any employees? Or
no, we are totally volunteer.
Wow. And where are you all based out of? You're in Lexington?
Yes, we are based in Lexington.
Awesome. So if there are any students or anyone interested in volunteering and getting involved with your organization, should they go on the website, or how can they get in touch with you all to help you fulfill your mission?
Yeah, they can just go to partneringforhopeky.com, and there's a link right there on the homepage to sign up to be a volunteer. And, I mean, we're always looking for people that are willing to help out, whether it be for, you know, just helping us deliver teddy bears, or
what a tough task,
or you know, even something as simple as, you know, helping us out on social media, posting things for us, keeping our name out there, mm-hmm. and building awareness.
Yeah, well, here at Lexington Community Radio, we're more than happy to help you all get the word out about all the good things that you're doing, and, you know, helping improve those kids' situations.
What are some of the present and future goals of your organization? Where do you see it going? What do you want? What do you want to accomplish? If you say have all the money in the world, what would you do?
That's my proudest thing, and you know, we talked about it and fought over it and cried over it and you know, blood, sweat, and tears trying to figure out exactly what we wanted to do. We wanted to do something that nobody's really doing, you know. And the solution we came up with was creating an environment for kids who have aged out of the system. So essentially they've turned 18, but they're still in the system, or they no longer in the system, because once you turn 18, that's it.
Right.
Who are still in school. You know, we want to provide them with a place they can stay, with counseling, with, you know, we do job training, just anything that they'll need during that 6 month to a year period, where that support is crucial. Because, I mean, that's make or break. They could either end up in jail or on the streets otherwise. And, you know, we don't want that. There's plenty of organizations out there that cater to kids and then cater to adults, but nothing for that particular area.
The state defines adulthood as the day you turn 18, not necessarily the day you graduate
from
high school. And maybe if you're a year behind, or a year and a half behind, or even just, you know, a couple classes behind, what are you going to do? I like that. Yeah, I like that you're focusing on that.
Plus,
that's,
I mean,
really neat.
Just, you know, this might be my opinion, but I know me personally, you know, at 18 years old, none of us are have the mindset of an adult. You're not ready for the world.
It's right. Not that much different between 17 and 18.
No. Yeah, just a number.
So, you know, we want to be able to provide that support, and that's what we're working towards.
Great.
That's awesome. Well, thank you all so much for coming in and talking with us. And before we wrap things up, can you let us know about some upcoming events that you all have going on? Can you, I guess, give us more information about the Teddy Bear Drive, but also if you have any other things going on that people can help out with?
Sure. Aside from the Teddy Bear Drive, which we do have locations, like I said, in Lexington, Nicholasville, Versailles, and Louisville, which we actually have posted the actual addresses and everything for these places on our Facebook and on our regular page. Another event that we're doing this month is we're calling it Pizza with a Purpose. And it's at Mellow Mushroom on Upper Street. Mm-hmm. And it's from 4 to 9 p.m. on November 17th. Anybody who comes out, just tell the server that you're supporting Partnering for Hope. And when you go to pay for your meal, just drop your receipt in the box. It'll be right by the register. And at the end of the night, they will contribute a percentage of the total cost to our nonprofit, which we'll probably use to buy teddy bears.
Yeah. Pizza for teddy bears. That's an exchange I can get behind.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you all so much for coming in. Ben, you have any...
No, other than to wrap up the show and say thanks for tuning in. I forgot to mention, iTunes is up. Mm-hmm. Which I'm very excited about.
Oh, yeah, you can listen.
It only took 2 weeks worth of,
so you can
of work to get that taken care of. Yeah, so you can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can search for us on iTunes. You can use our that little link now on our webpage, Works Appropriately. I'm very excited about that.
So Bluegrass Bios on iTunes now, so you can listen while you're hiking through the forest.
You can listen anywhere, anytime you like.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. You can listen while you're helping, partnering for Hope Kentucky deliver teddy bears.
Yes, there you go. Absolutely.
That's great. Well, Chris and Eric, thank you all so much for coming in and coming and talking to us a little bit more about partnering for Hope Kentucky. Best of luck in your work, and we really appreciate the goodness that you're giving to those kids.
Well, yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Was it partneringforhopeky.com?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Check it out. Nonetheless, Aging Adventures with Lydia Jacobs is up next. You've been listening to Bluegrass Bios here with Chuck and Ben. We'll see you next week. Peace. Oh, yeah. Also, listen to the rebroadcast tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Tomorrow at noon on the same station, WLXU 93.9 FM. Bye.